Hey, welcome to a new episode of Skin in the Game. This is your host, John Semperman, with my co-host.
I am Tim Olshai.
And Tim, our presenting partner, Holiday Valley. Have you got out on the slopes yet? Or am I going to get you out there skiing this year?
Ooh, we're going to go with choice two there. Because when we had Dennis Eschbach from Holiday Valley on the program late last spring or early summer. We sat in this room and I promised him I would come out and take a ski lesson this year. I asked him, Dennis, you know, I'm in my 40s and I've never skied. Am I too old to start? And you know the answer.
Never.
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 We get people your age all the time coming out.
Yeah.
I said I would. I will. And we're so happy to have him supporting the show.
Yeah, yeah. No, so thank our friends down at Holiday Valley and Ellicottville. And let's get to the program. Really excited because you're excited.
I'm so excited.
about this episode.
I have the book right here.
This is going to be our sports psychology episode.
This is our trash talking episode. If I thought I could pull it off, I was going to trash talk you right at this point in this show. It turns out being a good trash talker isn't so easy. And the reason I know that, John, is I read this book right here, Trash Talk, the only book about destroying your rivals. It is in total garbage by a great writer named Rafi Cohan. So I was out book shopping a couple of weeks ago, and I was looking for some other books, but I came across this this book with this bright yellow color and this wide open mouth with, you know, big teeth and the big words trash talk right there. So I was like, a book about trash talk.
This is going to be interesting.
I like sports books that go beyond sports, and it turns out this thing goes way beyond sports. So I got the book, started reading it, and reached out to the author, Rafi Cohan, and asked him to come on the show. Turns out a nice thing about having a show like this, John, is if we're interested in talking to somebody, they're interested in talking to us,
too.
No,
that's good. That's great. I can't wait for that. I've actually read Rafi's first book years back called The Arena, so can't wait to bring him on the program. Before we get to Rafi and do some trash talking, there is a couple of fun news, sports business news bites out there. And I'm not sure if you caught this one, Tim, but there's a new sport being launched professionally. Major League Wiffle Ball.
That's incredible. Sorry. I'm wondering what the trash talking looks like in wiffle ball. Tell me more about
this. I think this caught my eye because, you know, every couple weeks there's something new professionally, right? You've got pickleball now doing professional, and you've got slam ball, and we talked in a past episode about professional cheerleading.
Right. Slam ball and wiffle ball, I would put in maybe the same category of, I didn't see that coming, you know, but yeah, the first and the third.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
pickleball and cheerleading are hugely popular, but is wiffle ball as well?
As far as participation, it is. So here's the big, they're looking at launching a 10-team professional wiffle ball league.
All right.
You'll appreciate this. One of the team owners and one of the primary backers of this league is none other than Kevin Costner.
Mr. Field of Dreams himself.
Exactly.
Nice.
And actually,
and Bull Durham.
And actually, right, his team is going to be named the Anaheim Naturals.
Ooh.
Yes.
There's another.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
The Natural. Yeah.
Yeah. No. And kind of getting back to kind of why this makes sense. And you know something? It's an accessible sport. Anybody can play it. And a lot of people still do. And it's great content. You can get close-ups. You can, you know, all these TV networks and all these new streaming services, they're looking for content and they're looking for storytelling. And hey, you know, when you have the backing of someone like Kevin Costner, and you've got a sport that people do participate in, you know, it has some potential. It has some potential.
I mean, why not?
Yeah.
And I just didn't see it going pro. Part of me wonders, where do they get the players from?
Yeah, and we'll see what's
next. I didn't
think
you were going to hit me with that news today.
No. Who's next? We'll stay tuned on how this league evolves and develops, but there's other sports out there that I got a hunch are going to take that turn because, and I'll seriously, on a private equity perspective, there are private equity firms out there looking for creating their next league. And, you know, you look back 40, 50, 60 years ago, and there were people saying, I'm not sure if this football sport will ever go anywhere. You know, I'm not sure that this, you know, this sport will X, Y, or Z will do something. So, hey,
that
you never
fair.
Know.
That is very fair.
You never know when you catch a tiger by the tail, right?
Are hacky sacks still around?
They are. You do see a lot of both, obviously, soccer and hockey players, both professional and amateur. They're doing the hacky sack out in the locker room.
Oh yeah, sure you did. You worked there. I used to walk into the Buffalo Sabres locker room past three or four guys, you know, kicking around a hacky sack to warm up.
Yeah, yeah.
Turned pro with that one.
That's right. So we'll keep our eye on that.
Well, that makes me smile. Yeah. I am so happy that was a bit of news you brought for me this week. That's great.
But let's get back to sports psychology. Rafi Kohan is going to join us, author of a number of books in and around professional sports. But this one is titled Trash Talk. So stay tuned for our interview, and we'll be right back.
Support for BTPM comes from our members and from Holiday Valley. Holiday Valley was voted the number 4 resort in the East by Ski Magazine readers. More snowmaking, more lifts, more ways to play. Holiday Valley is a mix of exciting terrain on an independent mountain that brings out your best. From the first chair to the last run, Holiday Valley is what winter was made for. Holiday Valley, your winter done right. More information at holidayvalley.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Skin in the Game. And Rafi Kohan, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure to be here with y'all.
Well, we've been looking forward to this. So John is a reader of your first book, The Arena. I am a big fan of your new-ish book. It came out in 2023, Trash Talk. So I'm going to nerd out talking some sports psychology and trash talk with you. And John has a pitch for you on The Arena coming up.
Hey, Rafi,
people can stay tuned.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Yeah, I came across your book years back, and we'll dig in a little bit more on The Arena. But let's talk some trash first.
Start with trash talk. Yeah, so Rafi, great book. I'm gonna for the people watching. I'm gonna hold it up here. Rafi, I'm gonna show you and everybody who's watching. I've got many of the pages look like this, where I was highlighting, making some notes for myself. Because I got to find some ways to trash talk John on the radio here. What got you interested in this topic? What grabbed your attention about trash talk?
I've always sort of been interested in the idea of trash talk in the sense that I grew up as a child of the 90s, as a New York Knicks fan. You know, John Starks and Patrick Ewing and Anthony Mason and Charles Oakley and all of their epic battles with Reggie Miller and Michael Jordan and really the whole entire NBA of the 1990s, to be honest. And to me, there was always something so compelling and a little bit scary about guys who talk trash. There was something aggressive and confident and edgy. And it was just something that I couldn't personally necessarily relate to in terms of being a performer myself, but there was something magnetic about it. And it just sort of drew me to it in that way. And as I got older and played more basketball myself, I still didn't really become that big of a trash talker personally, but as I played, you know, I lived in Brooklyn for a long time and played a lot of pickup basketball, you know, in the playgrounds and in the YMCA. And there was lots of, you know, high level trash talk wherever you went around the, you know, the streets and playgrounds of Brooklyn. And there was one day that a friend of mine, my friend Jim, and I were playing one-on-one. He's actually the only person I talk trash to because I can get inside of his head, unlike other people. And we were just talking about it and how weird it is that, like, depending on who came into the gym on a given day, right, and how they talk trash, the way they talked it, like the energy of the entire court and the, you know, the gymnasium would change entirely. So there was more at play than like clearly meets the eye. It wasn't a singular thing. And so I just started to get interested in like, what is trash talk really? Where does it come from? And once you start to scratch the surface, you realize that despite what we think about trash talk as being this really modern, almost brand new invention. Whereas in reality, it's a mode of human communication that goes back basically to the beginning of time, or at least the beginning of language. It's something that we've always done, right? It's a deeply ingrained human behavioral phenomenon. It is you know, it is the language of competition. It's how we communicate when competing against one another. And once you start to realize that there's actual substance to this, that there's stuff happening beneath the surface too, then you start to realize the utility of it and the functionality of it. And you're able to sort of then dissect, well, how are people using it? How is it affecting me? To what end? And you can sort of, you know, spiral off into sort of, you know, historical and scientific discussions and linguistic, and then even into moral, philosophical, and ethical discussions as well. And so once I realized how much there really was to peel of this onion, I just knew that it was a topic that I wanted to dive into.
As a writer, I'm envious and impressed that you got to spend, I assume probably, what, 2 or 3 years working on this? How long did it take you?
Yeah, that's about right. 2-3 years. Yep.
You know, and John, in the book, you'll love it when you read it, because, and you'll see why I loved it too. Not only does it dive into, you know, a number of sports, I mean, a lot of basketball in there, a lot of hockey in there, a good amount of football in it, but it goes well beyond, you know, those three sports. Rafi, I love that you found your way into the Comedy Store in Los Angeles, and Lisa Lampanelli, the now retired, but, you know, longtime roast comic. You found your way to some, you know, really tough military training facilities. So, I mean, you studied trash talk, you know, far beyond sports as well. And great book out there for people who read it. Here's something I didn't realize, though. The term trash talk, Rafi, is fairly new. It was really coined, or at least popularized, in your lifetime, right?
Yeah, just ever so slightly before my lifetime, but only ever so slightly.
Only slightly. It started getting real coverage, though, like being labeled that, what, in the 80s or 90s, am I right?
Yeah, so the first example of trash talk in print that I could find was in 1981 in the Washington Post. I was born in 1983, so
gotcha. Aged you a little bit. Yeah,
just ever so slightly edged me out. But right, that, you know, the term sort of emerged, and I tried to sort of like trace it, you know, through the newspapers and magazines, because I think I thought it would be interesting to see sort of as the popularity grew, as the concept grew. And the phenomenon of it grew culturally, and as our understanding of it sort of, you know, began to take shape, we can really look at it in the 1980s. So the term trash talk was invented around 1981, and then it was popularized really throughout the early into the mid 1990s. So as I traced the use of the term, you really only found sporadic use throughout the 1980s, and then in the early 1990s, you would get maybe like a couple hundred hits. You know, again, in outlets across the country, national magazines and local outlets. But then in 1993, it just absolutely exploded. Thousands of hits everywhere. And there were trend stories written about trash talk, you know, places like Sports Illustrated, the New York Times Magazine. You would have segments on NBA pregame shows on NBC. And trash talk was really taking the world by storm, or at least the U.S. by storm. But again, it was this sort of, our understanding, our modern American conception of trash talk was sort of framed specifically around our idea of it as it grew out of sort of the Black oral tradition of the dozens, and then up through playground basketball and the sort of fledgling culture of hip hop. You know, and of course there were trash talkers well before this, we just had different terms for it. You know, you can think about bench jockeying in baseball, or razzing, or, you know, whatever else you might want to call it. But trash talk was a new moniker given to this ancient behavior to describe what young Black athletes were doing in the 1980s and 1990s. It was a way for people to describe this specific form of competitive incivility, of bench jockeying, of razzing. And as this happened, as this sort of term, you know, both popularized and it sort of exploded, and it became a kind of cultural phenomenon, you know, we started to get those, you know, your mama jokes books and the snaps and all these kinds of things that grew out of it. And even trash talk itself became kind of like a marketing tool for the NBA itself. There was really a stigma that came along with it, right? Like, and there's a great story that I came across, and I'm pretty sure this is in the book, where it was basically shortly after the invention of the term that there was this kind of backlash that leagues started trying to, like, you know, police the behavior of these folks because they saw it suddenly as, you know, deviant and unsportsmanlike. And it was when the Fab Five were playing at Michigan, And there was one day when Jalen Rose simply smiled at a referee, and the referee, you know, yelled at him, said, "There will be no smiling on this court today," which again, this was, he wasn't even talking trash, but it became so prevalent and became so stigmatized that this was something negative and unsportsmanlike that the backlash was that severe. And so that's why, you know, for me, I thought it was really important to sort of situate trash talk historically, you know, going back, you know, to ancient times, to biblical times, to understand that this isn't something new. This isn't something deviant. So then we can understand that this sort of modern, you know, American flavor of trash talk inflected by, you know, Black oral traditions and hip hop and, you know, playground culture is simply the newest form that this, that of this ancient behavior that is always going to come up and is part of who we are as social and competitive creatures. But yes, so trash talk, 1981 was the first instance that I could find.
Well, and Rafi, you brought up the mid-90s because I was actually in Cleveland with the Cavaliers those days. And yeah, you brought up the New York Knicks. You can't forget the Detroit Pistons, right? The Bad Boys. You know, back then, these teams really did not like each other, right? It's, you know, there wasn't the free agency. There was the serious rivalries. And I think while the term or the, you know, the moniker of trash talking was, you know, hundreds and thousands of years old, it was those mid-90s where it really became, you know, visible on the court.
That's exactly right. And so you can trace it again as we look at this. So, you know, the dozens is a tradition that's existed within the U.S. for at least 120 something years. I mean, there's a great book by Elijah Wald that traces the dozens. And there really is no definitive sort of historical account of where it comes from and when it started. But it's been around a long time. So it's been part of Black linguistic culture for a long time. But it really wasn't until Muhammad Ali stepped into the spotlight that America more, you know, and white Americans more broadly got our first unadulterated taste of, you know, dozens inflected trash talk, right? And so this was, so to us, when I say us, I'm saying, you know, white Americans, you know, who were seeing it for the first time, who had no sort of frame of reference for it, it felt like something new. It felt like something that had, you know, that was exotic, that was being introduced, you know, for the first time. And so, and as more and more Black athletes stepped into the spotlight in that way, and the sort of, you know, the, and Ali had his influence over hip hop, over other athletes who were, you know, willing to be more showmanlike, willing to exhibit more bravado and be their authentic selves to the extent that, you know, that it fit their authentic selves, you know, that we, that Americans more broadly and white Americans specifically started to see this more and more. And then I do think it hit that crescendo in the 1980s and 1990s. And that's why we started to get more of those trend stories. That's why it started to be sort of co-opted by commercial culture and marketing culture and those sorts of things. And you're also right to point out that, you know, this sort of era of peak trash talk coincides again with a time where the sport really lent itself to having these very heated rivalries, where animus was cultivated, you know, and real. And what's in, because what's interesting about that is you can look at the sort of arc of bench jockeying in baseball, and you can see that. So bench jockeying in baseball started around, it's basically the same arc, but about 100 years earlier. In the 1880s and 1890s, Arlie Latham was the, you know, this guy in the St. Louis Browns who sort of introduced trash talk to the masses, or bench jockeying as it was known. And it peaked, you know, for the next 30, 40 years or so. And then it started to go down, and really it went down during the era of free agency in baseball, once free agency came about, because suddenly, yeah, you were going to be in the same locker rooms as other guys, right, you know, right. And you were also making more money for, you know, for what that's worth, because you, and when you have more at stake, maybe you don't want to take that fastball to the ear. And if you don't want to take a fastball to the ear, you might not say that thing to the pitcher that might get under his skin, you know, that you might otherwise have said. So you're right to point out the free agency as well.
Yeah. Well, and Rafi, I think it's important that our listeners know trash talking isn't about vulgarities. It isn't swearing per se. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it's getting under someone's skin and getting inside of their heads. Is that a fair way to judge it?
No, and I appreciate you bringing up that point, because I do think, for all the reasons that we've mentioned, right, that sort of because of our cultural understandings of trash talk or misunderstandings of trash talk, and as well as just the fact that we have cultural differences in terms of the things that we might consider sportsmanlike in one situation versus another, or in one context versus another, that trash talk can be very sensitive to talk about with some people. Some people, you know, are very upset by the topic. They immediately go to that idea that this is somehow degrading a competitive spirit. It's degrading, you know, our sense of morality and the ethics of a game. And that's not what this is, or it's not what it should be. I mean, of course, you're always kind of riding that line when you get to the highest levels of sports, because people are always pushing the boundaries to find out where is that limit for real. But there is a difference between, in my mind, trash talk and bullying. There is a difference between trash talk and pure abuse. And I'll tell you real quick a couple of the distinctions that I've come up with. And the lines are subjective, for whatever it's worth, too. So your line might be different than my line. But as I see it, trash talk is an invitation to compete, right? I am offering you an opportunity to raise your game. And implicit in that is the opportunity to respond. You have the chance to respond. Whereas bullying, you're trying to shut someone down. You're trying to silence them. So trash talk invites a response while bullying seeks to silence. And I think that's a critical, and whether the individual themselves is actually, you know, allowing the response or the context of the game itself allows it. Either way, the response is critical. And then in terms of abuse, you know, there are gray areas here, right? The things that you might think are unacceptable, I might think are totally fine. But where I've sort of been able to draw, you know, at least examples that I think most people can agree on, think about Jackie Robinson when he broke the color line. Okay. The players who were, you know, jeering him with racist abuse, they weren't just trying to get under his skin. They were also leveraging outside systems of power and oppression that had material consequence on his life and the lives of Black folks in America. And so there's other systems at play, and, you know, systems of power at play here. So I do think that there is a distinction to be made, but we also have to be, you know, cognizant of the fact and, you know, and accommodate the fact that there aren't going to be clear lines either. But trash talk, again, is something that's done within the context of competition, right? And when you have the context of competition, certain things might be permittable here that might not be otherwise. Kind of like all the, you know, the comedians that I got to spend time with out at the Comedy Store. So what I did out there was I spent time with these guys who do what's known as roast battle. Actually, I was just with them this past weekend or 2 weekends ago in Austin, Texas. They were doing one of their playoff battles at the Comedy Mothership. And I went down to hang out with them for the weekend. And if you've never seen a roast battle, well, you can probably figure it out. It's like a comedy roast meets a rap battle. The things that are said, you know, would be so over the line in like everyday conversation if you were walking down the street. But the context of the activity itself creates a permissive space in the same way that boxers are allowed to punch each other and UFC fighters are allowed to hit and kick each other, right? There are certain things that are allowed here that are not allowed elsewhere. So there is, I do think that there is both a clear distinction about what trash talk is, or at least should aspire to be, but also because we're playing with fire in this way, in the same way, you know, if you're slap boxing with a friend of yours in the backyard, one of you hits a little bit harder than the other one appreciates, and suddenly you're hitting a little bit harder back. And, you know, this can go in different directions. There's a great quote from Zora Neale Hurston, and she was talking about the dozens. And she said, it is a risky pleasure, right? And that's because, again, you know, this is a lightning rod. This can go in a lot of different directions. But the thing that maybe is most interesting about, you know, what defines the quality of trash talk itself is not actually what's said, but how a person responds, right? Because if you say something, but I don't get upset, then was it upsetting? If you say something and I don't get offended, was it offensive? Right. So actually, when I spoke to referees in the NBA and NFL, they told me the same thing, because I wanted to know, when do you blow the whistle? When do you throw the flag? And what they said is, we always look at the person who's the target And we want to see how they respond. Are they going to escalate? How are they going to respond?
The, you know, there's an anecdote in there where, and you can help me out here, I think it might have been Magic Johnson or someone from the Lakers who is admonishing a young teammate, don't talk to Larry Bird. Larry Bird's going to trash talk you. Don't talk back to him. Do I have that right?
It was Michael Jordan with B.J. Armstrong. Yeah.
Well, okay. Michael Jordan, B.J. Armstrong, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird. But yeah, no, I mean that.
It was Michael Jordan talking to B.J. Armstrong, telling him not to talk trash to Larry Bird.
To Larry Bird. Right, right.
Yeah.
Don't engage.
And why was that? Why was that with Larry? Did it have a negative effect? Did it get him more fired up? What was the reason for that?
So this actually brings me back to your last question, which might be worth just quickly circling back on, because I've worked my way up to a definition of trash talk, which is not in the book, but because enough people have asked me, how do you define trash talk? And I just hand them a 300-page book and they say, no, tell me faster. And that is specifically from a sports psychology perspective, trash talk is an attempt to verbally manipulate the anxiety, attention, efficacy beliefs, or motivation of oneself or one's opponent to affect performance outcomes. All of which is to say, these are the pathways by which trash talk can affect performance. And Larry Bird understood that trash talk affected his performance very positively because it was a way for him to make sure that he was engaged in the competition. It was a way for him to hold himself accountable, right? It was a way to present himself with challenges to make sure that he would get to his highest level of competition. And actually, it's another quote from BJ Armstrong. I was talking to BJ about this, and he said that, you know, this is the thing that he learned about trash talkers, is the best trash talkers want you to be at your very best, because what they want to find out is will my best be better than your best? Because when you get to your best, you're going to raise my game too. Right. And this is a concept known within sports psychology as social facilitation. It's the idea that a rival can push you further than you can go on your own. And so when you are inviting someone to compete with trash talk or otherwise, you are giving them that opportunity to raise their game, to get to a higher level. But when they get to a higher level, they are in turn challenging you to get to a higher level. That is the social facilitation. And it's actually sort of, you know, ironically, an incredibly pro-social utility of trash talk, of this very seemingly antisocial behavior, right? So when we can get past sort of the superficiality of the language itself and understand the mechanisms beneath it, now suddenly we realize, oh, we don't need to be offended here. Or even better, it's to our benefit to not be offended, because what's really happening is this is a chance for me to get to the best version of myself.
This is where I really, John and Rafi, I really start nerding out, because, you know, I was going through Rafi and highlighting, and I'm not a trash talker, but, you know, I'm so interested in communications. And I got to tell you, reading the book just sent me away with a whole, you know, pages and pages of notes on, among other things, how to grab people's attention. So I'm going to turn to John on this. Which form of trash talking would be better, do you think? Look at somebody and say some version of, you suck, or look at them and say, why do you suck today? Which one do you think is better?
I think the latter. I think the latter would go a little deeper, at least a little, have more of a reaction for me.
Rafi, if I have it correct, the question is perhaps more likely to grab someone's attention, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and so as it was explained to me, right, so that statements your minds are more likely to sort of, you know, refute. So if you tell me I suck, I'm more likely to think of reasons why I don't suck. Whereas if you ask me, do you suck? Now I'm going to, my mind involuntarily, unconsciously, is going to grapple with those questions and thinking of reasons why I in fact do suck. So, you're absolutely right, Tim.
Yeah, it's, again, it's just getting in someone's head, right?
Yeah, it's like
self-doubt.
You know, yeah, it's like, you know, yeah. Don't, I think you wrote this in there, Rafi, but don't think of a pink elephant, the first thing that comes in your head. Pink elephant, right?
Right.
Yeah, so I mean, but just loaded with information on that. I appreciated, too, reading about the hockey player Sean Avery, probably one of the all-time most effective trash talkers in any sport, sitting there and just, I think, like collecting clippings, like newspaper clippings, researching and point opponents, trying to figure out like what to say about them, how to get under their skin.
Yeah, and like I was saying before, in terms of the definition, one of the pathways to affect performance outcomes is attention, right? Because, and without getting too nerdy on it, we have different bands of attentional focus, right? We can have a very wide band where we're taking in a lot of information, or we can have more narrow bands. And these are things are also affected by the amount of anxiety we're experiencing. When we have more anxiety, our attention narrows. And there are certain tasks for which we want to have wider anxiety, you know, a sort of broader, you know, field of focus, and ones we want to have more narrow focus. And the key, though, is you always want to be engaging with task-relevant information and sort of discarding or ignoring the task-irrelevant cues. Trash talk, obviously, is a task-irrelevant cue. And it can work in a couple of ways in terms of attention. One is if you can increase the anxiety levels of someone, you can narrow their attention in a potentially dysfunctional way. You can also lead to cognitive overload because there's only so much we can keep in mind at the same time, right? And so if I'm saying something, that what I want to do is I want to say something that's going to grab your attention, be attention grabbing in that way. And there are a few things that are, from what I've come across, are particularly attention grabbing. One is threat, right? You know, our brains are hardwired, you know, to understand, you know, threat as something worth, you know, paying attention to, because, you know, this is lions in the savannah. We want to understand threat, and we are really primed to notice those sorts of things, whether it's social or physical. Our brains and our bodies react the same way. But also things that are unexpected are particularly attention grabbing as well. And it can be, you know, something as specific as, you know, a personal name from your history or something you did in the off season. And that could be that research that comes up, you know, that comes in handy. And by the way, that Sean Avery doing that is nothing new. John McGraw, the old baseball manager, he hired a private detective to dig up information about his opponents so he could shout it out during games. You know, so saying something very personal is a great way to grab someone's attention. But also you can think about guys like Andrew Luck, who famously was very polite on the field. And after he was tackled by, you know, an opposing defensive lineman, he'd stand up, slap him on the butt and say, "Great job, man. You really tackled me great that time." But the politeness is what is so unexpected that takes a portion of your attention that should be going elsewhere. Philip Rivers, who was always very G-rated in his trash talk, was similar in the sense that he would grab people's attention because he would never curse. He was incredibly aggressive. He was demeaning in the things that he said, but he never cursed. And before games, the opposing coaches would literally, you know, gather their entire defensive units, and they would say, "All right, guys, get ready for dadgummit," because that's, you know, they were just going to hear all of this like weird old timey, you know, flim flam fake cursing coming from across the line of scrimmage. And it was going to be so unexpected that you were going to pay attention to it. Then what you were referring to before, Tim, in terms of the don't think of a pink elephant, that is what's known as the theory of ironic effect. And that's the idea that if you want to plant a seed in someone's head, you want to give them something to not think about. Because when we try to suppress unwanted thoughts, when we try to ignore things, we actually, ironically, that makes them bigger, right? So actually those coaches who were telling their players, you know, get ready for dadgummit, what they were actually doing was planting the seed to pay attention to it. You know, and so what you want to do is really sort of actively focus your attention where it's supposed to go instead of trying to not think about the thing that someone's telling you not to think about, because that will only make it bigger and bigger and bigger. That is the don't think of a pink elephant.
So Rafi, I gotta, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, how it really came, trash talking really came into its own in the mid-90s. And it obviously there's a strong association with basketball, right? But, you know, do we see it? You know, Tim, you brought up Avery with the Rangers, who was a trash talker. I would think there's a former Buffalo Sabre, Matthew Barnaby, who may have had a little bit of trash talking
on that list somewhere.
On that list. But I got to ask you, Rafi, what about other sports? And you brought up getting in somebody's head. Anything come up around professional golf? Is there any trash talking on the golf course that you're aware of?
Yeah. So the idea of looking at trash talk across different sports is really interesting because we have to take into account the cultural norms that kind of dictate, the codes of behavior across these different sports, right? If a golfer were to come up to another golfer and, scream at them like Gary Payton after stealing the ball from someone, that probably wouldn't go over very well, right? But the same mechanisms in terms of affecting performance and getting into someone's head can absolutely still apply. And so, yes, there is trash talk in golf, and I'll give you two examples. One is I found an incredibly early example. I forget exactly what year, but it was like early 1900s, the 19-teens, something along those lines. And one golfer went up to another at a major, and he said to him, "Why don't you roll down your shirt sleeves so the gallery doesn't see your muscles quivering?" Right? So it was... saying that this, his opponent was so scared that he could see him quivering. And then the other example is that when Abraham Ancer was going to be playing in the Ryder Cup for, he is a Mexican-American player. He was going to be going against the U.S. team. And a reporter asked him and said, "Who would you like to be paired up against?" And Ancer said, "Well, Tiger Woods is my hero. I would love to be paired up with Tiger. What an honor that would be." I don't know if those are his exact words, but that was the spirit of what he said. So Tiger hears this, and he does get paired with Abraham Ancer. And the way that he responded to this was as if, Abraham Ancer had killed his dog. He just went out and he absolutely trounced him. And when it was over, he said to a reporter, "Well, Abe asked for it, and he got it." So he was using this, and once again, like Larry Bird, like Michael Jordan, who always invented those slights for motivational fuel, he was using this to get to the level that he needed to be at his best. His zone of optimal functioning, which is the sort of framework within sports psychology that's known as. But again, the other thing I would say about the different sports and the ways that it can present is that it can also change over time. I was having a conversation with some sports psychologists about a month ago. I spoke at a conference for sports psychology, and we were talking about these different sports, and they were saying, "Well, what about this one? What about judo?" And I was like, I gave the same answer that that these games can take different forms. And then one of them said, "Yes, actually, you're exactly right. The way in which what we would try to intimidate one another before we got onto the mat or in amateur wrestling at the weigh-ins." And because there's plenty of trash talk in professional wrestling, there's not in amateur wrestling. But it's the same mechanisms of trying to manipulate, the performance outcomes through the psychological gamesmanship. And the thing is that these cultures and norms can also change over time. Because believe it or not, in the early days of mixed martial arts, there was no trash talk in MMA. Now you think about Ronda Rousey, Conor McGregor, and you can hardly believe it. But there was no trash talk because it was all built on these sort of codes of honor on which the original martial arts, that came to construct mixed martial arts. But there was a guy who came in the late 1990s, a guy named Josh Gormley. He went by Josh Dempsey. And he was the first person to ever talk trash in MMA. And he came into the scene in Northern California and he said, I won't curse here, but he said, "I'm going to knock you the blank out and I'm going to knock you the blank out." And all the guys who were there were like, "This is so shocking. Nobody's ever done this before." But then they took a minute to think and they're like, "This is pretty cool. Like I'm here for this energy, right? I'm not taking this personally. I'm not offended. This is a guy who's introducing a way to increase the stakes of competition, to raise the psychological stakes, to get us to a higher level of competition. And I am here to compete for that." So I'm not saying that, judo or figure skating are going to become like the next frontier of trash talk. But the point is what we think of as being unacceptable in certain spaces is purely constructed based on our understanding of those norms and standards.
You know, and we're talking here, Rafi, generally about world-class performers, people who are the best in their sport, who have been, you know, in many cases are playing a kid's game, you know, a game that was designed for kids or youth, in becoming multimillionaires as adults, right? So they're going to be, they're operating differently. They're probably wired a little bit differently. You can push back on that if I'm wrong. But what I'm wondering is, you know, if you got into this, if you go away from that pro level and away from the top college level and start getting into youth sports, is there a lot of trash talking going on there? Or are younger athletes looking at these, you know, world-class, famous, iconic athletes and starting to emulate some of the trash talk they see or they hear about?
I mean, certainly, I think within youth sports, I mean, there's a, I doubt there are many administrators or coaches who would want to encourage trash talk at like the youngest levels of sport. And nor would I suggest that, you know, the young, anyone should be training how to be a world-class trash talker when you're in peewee baseball or peewee football and, you know, little league and all that kind of stuff. What I would say, though, is that I think it's a misunderstanding to say that young kids who talk trash are somehow emulating the pros, because in reality, it was actually trash talk that grew up from the playgrounds and the little league fields that then sort of, you know, became part of professional sports. That it came from the, you know, hey, batter, batter, batter. It came from all these things that we do that we're all familiar with and we don't even think twice about. What I do think is important, especially for youth sports, is you do need to make sure that it is a psychologically safe space for everyone to be competing in. And with trash talk in particular, even at the youth level, I don't know that it's not that it would be the wrong thing to have conversations with young athletes about trash talk. Not to say, here's how you should talk trash and here's the most effective way to get under someone's skin. But it is a fact of competition. And I do think we do ourselves a disservice when we pretend like it doesn't exist or we just try to stamp it out altogether, as opposed to explaining, here's how it operates. Here's how you can understand it within this space. Here are the ways you can understand it in terms of having the self-awareness in terms of like what I need to do to, in response, you know, to get to my best self, to get to the, you know, the best version of myself. How can I control what I can control and allow the other things to fade away? But also, if a coach wanted, and I wouldn't tell you what is the right age, you know, to do it, but if you were to have trash talk within a kind of, you know, a safe space of practice of some kind to sort of practice the mental skills, you know, that trash talk gives us a unique opportunity to develop, right? Things like self-awareness, things like stress appraisals and attentional control and learning to, you know, tell yourself positive stories through adversity and stress and failure. That if there's a way to build that kind of trust and safe space and to do it in a way that can feel purely like purely challenge-based and not threat-based, then I don't know that that's necessarily the wrong thing to do. But again, I do think that it would be important to do so within you know, very, you know, clear constraints, you know, having conversations and also understanding that maybe this isn't right for everyone too. And you don't want to, you know, get to a point where you're making someone feel like they cannot participate in this space. That would be a negative, but it also might just be that they need different tools, different mental tools to get to that same level as, a, you know, as some of their teammates. So again, I do think we need to be careful with this stuff because, like I said, it's a risky pleasure. It's a double-edged sword, but it's also a fact of competition. And I think we are doing ourselves a disservice to not at least acknowledge it and to have conversations about it and to understand what is the way to introduce the concept, whether that concept is just saying, here's what it is, here's how it operates, let's talk among ourselves about the things that we're comfortable with and what we're not comfortable with. And that's not even saying with other teams, that's just within your own team, within a practice space, within a psychologically safe space. But, you know, it's a pretty live wire topic. I can tell you from experience, and some people are probably going to take that the wrong way, but it really does come down to me that I think there's a big misunderstanding for a lot of people about what trash talk is. I think a lot of it, you know, stems from the way that the term grew up, the way it became, again, stigmatized and racialized, and it became seen as something unsportsmanlike. But again, I think that is a cover, a kind of cloud cover for what are really interesting, you know, scientific, you know, psychological mechanisms that affect performance. And that the way we negotiate this space is going to happen whether we're aware of it or not. And I would suggest that it's way better to be aware of it so that we can stay in control of our own performance.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's some pretty solid advice is, you know, letting these, if we're talking specifically about youth sports, you know, how can they need to understand what the motive was from their competitor. But then I love the story of whether it's Tiger Woods or Larry Bird on how to, what could be perceived as a negative, that they can flip it as a positive. But yeah, just being aware of it and understanding what the motive is of that trash talker.
And you know, perversely, in some ways, having someone talk trash to you is an incredible form of flattery. It's really, it's superficially very disrespectful, but it's actually incredibly, you know, it's an act of respect, right? You wouldn't talk trash to someone who isn't worth talking trash to. By simply talking trash, it is saying that you are a worthy competitor. You are someone that I take seriously. And again, the more that you can even give yourself that kind of framework for understanding this stuff so that you don't become upset, so that you don't become offended, so you don't get distracted, your attention doesn't go somewhere where it shouldn't go, so that you can stay in control of your anxiety levels and bring and self-regulate back to where you need to be. Like, these are all important conversations, whether it's related to trash talk or any other kind of distraction or stressor that we might encounter for in sports or frankly anywhere. I mean, we're all performers in our own way, right? These are skills and tools of mental toughness. And to be at our best, right, we have to be able to deal with stress. We have to be able to deal with challenge. We have to be able to deal with discomfort in a functional and positive way. And trash talk is just a kind of fun and really unlikely, you know, topic area that gets into these ideas that can show us, actually, here's the ways that I can prepare myself to deal with these adverse conditions. Here's how I can perform under pressure. Here's how I can be at my best even when I am stressed. Trash talk simply shows us that. And that's, again, it's true for athletes. It's true for bench jockeys. I mean, like desk jockeys. And it's true for people at home as parents. I think about it all the time, how I apply these same lessons in terms of, like, literally, you know, when my kid does something that drives me crazy, you know, taking a breath, you know, and doing a kind of stress appraisal to bring myself back to where I want to be, to perform the way I want to perform as a parent. I mean, these really are lessons that are universally applicable.
Yeah, that's right on. That's right on. Hey, Rafi, I want to thank you for joining us. We didn't get into your book, The Arena, which we're going to get you back on Skin in the Game to talk about, because I'm going to, in addition, I need to read Trash Talk, but then I also want to enlighten our listeners on your book, The Arena, because it really gives a really fun kind of inside, you know, or behind the curtain look at professional sports. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that book was written in 2017.
Correct.
Well, here in 2025, so much has changed. So as Tim alluded to, I'm going to propose that A, we get you back on the show to talk about that book, but B, that I am going to propose that you need to write a new edition talking about all the new developments in, you know, the spectator side of sports. So that'll be a really interesting conversation.
We'll do an interview that you can put in the book proposal for the next edition. Exactly. If you want to write it.
Exactly. No, but a great conversation. And I agree with you. The whole concept of trash talking, while it's kind of embedded in sports, it's really part, fortunately or unfortunately, a part of everyday life. So being prepared for it and understanding that they're trying to get into your head, I think is an important lesson to learn.
And Rafi, I can't thank you enough. It is a pleasure to read the book and then be able to pick the brain of the author about it. So, and John, thanks for it. John gets to sit here as I'll dive deep into the psychology of numerous topics. So Rafi, thank you for going along with that. And John, glad we had Rafi on.
Awesome. Thanks again, Rafi.
It's my pleasure. I love talking about this stuff. So thank you guys very much.
But we'll talk to you again soon. We'll be back right after this.
Support for BTPM comes from our members and from Holiday Valley. Holiday Valley has winter fun everyone can agree on. Holiday Valley was voted the #4 resort in the East by Ski Magazine readers. Holiday Valley features mountain coaster rides, snow tubing, the Tamarack Club Spa, and of course, skiing and snowboarding. At Holiday Valley, you can just relax too. Winter starts here. More information at holidayvalley.com.
Hey, welcome back to Skin in the Game. And Tim, a really interesting conversation with Rafi Kohan. Interesting conversation that I didn't quite think that much about trash talking and actually how it really is a competitive advantage, or in the case of when you're playing against Larry Bird, it's a competitive disadvantage.
Don't talk to Larry Bird. That was the rule. Don't pay attention to him, because if you do, he's going to get in your head. It's funny. I did it. Not to go back in time too much for too long. I grew up watching Larry Bird. I did not realize what a trash talker he was. I wasn't looking for it, and obviously they weren't miking guys,
right.
You know, and there wasn't social media and such to pick up on that stuff. But yeah, I mean, I love... Because I keep recruiting people onto our show here who write these really interesting books. I love reading about a topic that, you know, we all know about trash talk, but you wouldn't, like you said, John, think about or go that deep on. And so someone like Rafi Kohan's out there devoting 2-3 years of his professional life to researching this in from every imaginable angle, too. That's the interesting thing when you read the book. And I said this before, like, it's going to take you deep, deep, deep into sports, but you're going to see how sports connect with comedy, and what happens on a comedy stage is not dissimilar verbally to what happens on, you know, the field of play in sports,
sure.
Which is not completely dissimilar, though, largely to what special forces troops, you know, need to use. Not physically necessarily, but mentally, to
right.
keep their focus.
Well,
he really draws the lines.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up comedy. Think about it, you know, as a professional comedian, you know, heckling is in some cases a form of trash talk, right?
Right.
And how?
Oh, very much so.
How do you, as a comic, keep your composure and use that, you know, and spin it as a positive?
Yeah.
So you see that, and I'll just, you know. Whether you're making a sales presentation, whether you're standing up doing comedy, whether you're a performing artist, beyond that, musician, whatever, and obviously sports, that's part of the mental, that's the psychology. And, you know, whoever you're competing with or performing for is trying to get inside your head. And I think the ability for you to understand what their motivation is and how to use that to fuel a positive for you is important. And I'm really glad you brought up the kind of the role of, you know, how it affects, you know, amateur athletics, how it affects youth sports. And, you know, while I've been a coach for many years, I would never encourage quote unquote trash talking, but I think it's smart to sit the kids down and let them know that, hey, your competitors are going to try to get into your head, and here's how you keep your composure. Here's how you stay cool. Here's how you don't let them get the competitive advantage.
You know, and I'm thinking through this as a coach, as a teacher, as a parent. How do you can't necessarily tell kids simply don't do it and ignore it. You certainly could say that. Honestly, it feels like something I might be inclined to say, but the reality of that is they're not going to just be able to ignore it most of the time. Most people can't, adults and especially kids can't do that. And they may or may not engage in it, but if they do, what are the boundaries? What's the line?
Right.
And what's okay on the field versus off the field? What's okay when you're a youth athlete to say to another player versus to a coach who's an adult, right, an authority figure, versus a referee who may or may not be an adult but is an authority figure, you know, and we could keep going deeper and deeper. Something, just to play on this line, though, something Rafi wrote about and we just talked about was, you know, there are people out there, pro athletes, who trash talk through compliments. Andrew Luck, right, the quarterback, gets sacked, stands up and compliments the guy, and what an incredible sack.
I think someone
so
like
good.
Peyton Manning was kind of the same way.
Oh,
right?
Sure.
He just couldn't get under his skin, and he was like a new waxed car, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, that was a great hit, man. You know, that's why another one is using questions. Like, you know, we brought up, and I kind of put you on the spot there. Thank you for bearing with me, but, you know, using questions. So there's a lot you can learn about how to handle this with class or how to ignore it. Right. And, you know, and also just how your brain works in focusing your attention on the right thing versus the wrong thing.
Now, I got to ask you, Coach, and many of our listeners here in Skin in the Game, you know, Tim, his side hustle is coaching girls flag football at the high school level. Yep. Hear or see any trash talking on the field?
That's funny. I was sitting. I'm so glad you asked me this. I was sitting here thinking about one player we have on the team who I'm gonna have to ask her. I'm pretty sure she goes out there, and I know she does it non-verbally. She'll stare people down, she'll get not inappropriately close, but just a little, she'll linger like a little closer on somebody for a moment and then back off, you know, like after a play. I'll have to ask her how often she gets into it. I will tell you that they certainly hide it from me. They're not making it obvious. And I think that's probably true of most youth athletes,
right,
most of the time. They don't want coach and they don't want the referees to hear it.
Right, right, right. I could see trash talking becoming a little bit part of the, I don't want to say part of the game, but, you know, when you're not wearing the equipment like basketball, when you're really face to face, right, without the helmets and,
right.
I think there's more likelihood of a little bit of that verbal competition in sports like that versus tennis, where you're, you know, 50 yards apart, right? Or golf, where in many cases you're hundreds of yards apart. But I could see flag football. You might definitely.
They're tough, you know, hard-nosed athletes. And obviously, I mean, those things is an incredible compliment.
Yeah.
I'll put it this way, and this, I hope this comes out the right way. If you're going to see it in hockey and you're going to see it in basketball, if you're going to see it in baseball or softball, you certainly see it in tackle football, then yeah, within, and I'm going to say this very carefully, within a certain level, you know, with a certain level of decorum and within boundaries, in, you know, in the boundaries of respect, I would kind of hope that they do it if they're inclined, or at least that they respond if they think it's necessary. What I don't mean, though, is don't bully, don't be demeaning, don't use language, certainly don't get into you know, racial statements and things like that. I mean, there's very clear boundaries that are too
right.
far.
Right.
But if it's, you know, if it's challenging somebody on, you know, how they're playing or just on the play, right? Just on what's right. happening on the field. This book got me thinking, is it a bad thing? Is it, you know, maybe it's a good thing? I think there's more of a gray area there within certain boundaries.
Yeah, yeah. I think back coaching my little league days, I think the boundary was better swing and pitcher's got a rubber arm.
stuff like that, or, you know, you're not going to be able to fill in the blank, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah, I agree with Rafi. It's part of the competition. I was never a great athlete. I was never a great trash talker, never real inclined to do it. I don't know, maybe those things go together. The wasn't so good at this, wasn't so good at that. You know, I'm glad you got Rafi talking a little bit about the difference. You asked a question that got him into the difference between trash talk and bullying, you know, and then, you know, some other things
right.
too. There's a reference he uses in the book, and I'm going to preface this with, I'm not making a political statement. I'm making a statement of of fact that, you know, Donald Trump, when he was first running for president, and this book, by the way, was written before he was reelected. So just looking at the first term, there's a little reference to when he was running for president in 2016 or leading up to the 2016 election. You know, he was trash talking some of those opponents right on stage. I mean, Jeb Bush was one of those. I remember it clearly. That is a little different. That's trash talking. That's not bullying, because those people up on the stage have every ability to respond. How they choose to, whether they choose to, is a different thing, but they can respond. Whereas if you're the president of the United States, you've got that bully pulpit, and you single out, somebody who's not another world leader, or at least a high elected official in high office.
Quote, a competitor.
Yeah, a competitor, yeah. If you single out a citizen and you target at that person that way, then you're punching down. You know, you're not punching laterally, you're punching down. So that's whether it's Donald Trump or any other elected official, any celebrity with a huge
right.
audience,
right.
there's that punching down versus, you know, punching up or punching laterally. And that's something he gets to in the book, which I thought was a very valuable discussion. We didn't have that with him, but I want to throw it out there
sure.
for people to read it.
Sure, sure. Well, and we encourage everybody to pick up the book, Trash Talk,
yeah.
Raffi Cohen. And it's the book all about destroying your rivals that isn't totally garbage.
Yeah, the only book about destroying your rivals that isn't total garbage. That's the subtitle of the book, Trash
yeah.
Talk. Great read, great audiobook too. If you prefer to listen versus flip through the pages, give it a shot.
Right. Again, Raffi, thanks for joining us on Skin in the Game, and all of our listeners, thanks for tuning in to the sports psychology episode of Skin in the Game. This is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Thanks for listening.